What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's Resistance in Residence artist is artistic director and choreographer Annika Lewis. She has a new production out called Soul Catcher, which is running in the 2024 San Francisco International Arts Festival, taking place in the Mission District from May 1st to the 12th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Annika, I want to start with a little bit about you and specifically where and how you grew up. What was your family like?
Yeah, I'm born in San Francisco, and this was in the end of the 60s, and my Swedish-American mother and American father, they decided to move to Sweden, where my grandmother and grandfather on my mother's side lived. So I grew up in Sweden, and right now I'm in Denmark, Copenhagen, where I'm been living in for many years, so that this is my base.
When did you discover the arts, and what art form did you discover first?
It was dance. I was born with a hip, I don't know the English name actually, but a hip distortion. And so I was put in a cast when I was a baby. And luckily, I was born in San Francisco at that time, because at that time they had started to fix how you can heal the hip. And my mom said to me, when they took off the cast, I was just dancing. So, and I love to believe that was the beginning of my dance career, that for me dance and movement is my primal expression and where I have my soul and joy.
Say more about that, your primal expression. How does that manifest?
I decided pretty early to go to school and to learn more about dance and movements, and that took me into the opportunity to both work professionally as a dancer and then also to develop myself as a choreographer. Something happens, though, when you start to work with your hobby or what you really love. You get some pressures in a different way than if you are not earning your living on that. So, but it also demands from you that you are more focused and more disciplined than if you just did it for joy.
We talk about a lot of times with arts that it can open up new worlds, both for the practitioner, but also for the folks that are viewing it. What new worlds did dance open up for you?
It opens up possibilities and space for new thoughts and for a new perspective on the world and on myself. And it's a, because of the very tactile, ground, or how to say, the spine of dance, It's also a very primal expression we have as a human, where dance and music and song is, I will say, our right, but also our primary expression. And for me, it's both. It's so many different things. It also touches the feeling of being connected to another person or other people. So it's also building a community, and it's also expression of the community. And so you also can let your own ego go. So it's something else that come in put into play. And it's also something that is very close to, and can be close to, some sort of ecstasy where you transcend in the being. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Annika, I want to talk about this piece, Soul Catcher. What is it about, and where did you get your inspiration?
Yeah, I want to also share with you that I've been working with theater, and not only dance, but also theater and performance art as long as I've been dancing as well. And the Soul Catcher is a piece that is a mix of theater and dance and performance art, I would say. And it started with my own experience that in being in a very abusive relationship. And as part of my own healing and trying to move on and let go of this very addictive, also paradoxically addictive situation, I started to write. And it was very private writings. The aim wasn't to share it with anyone, only with myself, and to keep track of time and space, because when you are in an abusive relationship or an abusive situation, it's very common that you lose the sense of time and space. So for me, it was also a tool for keeping myself sane and looking back to what actually had happened. So these texts, after some years when I were on the other side, so to speak, of this relationship, I look back into these writings and I realized, wow, I should do something about it. I should share these stories with other people that are maybe in the same situation or know somebody who are in a similar situation. Because a part of the healing, but also part of, a part of the healing is to talk about it, to share your story. But it's also to put light on something that is very hidden in our society, but a lot of people are experiencing it. So I wanted to address something that is a big taboo in our society. Yeah.
What caught my eye is that there are different types of abusive relationships. This piece is specifically about narcissistic abuse, of which I'm also a survivor. Can you talk about narcissistic abuse, and what do you think some of the most common misconceptions about that type of abuse are?
A lot of us who have experienced it and who are survivors, we had no clue what we were drawn into, and we didn't know what we didn't know. And me, because I will speak for myself, realized after a period of time that this is something totally strange and wrong. And I realized I was in a very, very difficult situation. And I was still not really clear over what was really going on. And what's happening is that there is a lot of different manipulations, techniques that you have been drawn in with, and therefore you are struggling with understanding what is happening, what's up and down, and you are struggling with cognitive dissonance. you don't know really anymore if you are maybe the evil person or the other person is. And also that you are trying to not make the other person to get angry at you. So you are walking on eggshells. You are trying to please the other person, that person will not be angry at you. And so you have very difficulties in understanding and seeing your own situation. And I would say that is very typical. If you are lucky, and I was very lucky, I had some friends around me who were there for me and who didn't judge me and was helping me out and didn't push me either to do a decision. So for me, that was extremely helpful to be able to come out of this situation. And that is another thing that most survivors are struggling with. It's the addiction to the situation. You are nearly high of being in stress for so long time. And the stress also makes you doubt yourself and doubt the reality that you are in the middle of. So this addiction, and that is caused by the hot and cold behavior that you are dealing with, and something called intermittent reinforcement, that is the slot machine effect, that you get very addicted when you are treated in a way that you don't really can predict and you don't know what is going to happen. Yeah, so you are struggling with a lots of distortion in your own perception that is as difficult as the other person that are abusive towards you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, when people hear abusive relationship, they immediately think, you know, physical violence. That's usually the first thing that pops, you know, into someone's mind. But and not that narcissistic abuse can't also be violent, but at least my experience and those of other survivors that, you know, I've talked with and read about, it really is the mental and the emotional. And I think like you were describing it a bit there, right? Like you stop trusting your own judgment, you stop trusting your own thought patterns. And for me, at least, and I mentioned for you, like that is the piece that I feel like I'm still healing from years later, that I'm still like rewiring my brain back to a place where it's centered and grounded and they are my thoughts, not the thoughts or the lies that my abuser taught me, indoctrinated me with.
Yeah.
You said that, that you decided to share some of the texts because it was part of your healing journey. Can you say more about what that journey has been like for you?
Yeah, it was maybe my most challenging period in my life, I think. So I stumbled. I will tell this story because it's very important, I think. I stumbled over domestic violence shelter. This was in a ladies' restroom where they had some small cards. And because I was in a private room, I just took one card. If I would have been in a public space where other people would have been, I would not have taken a card. Anyway, I took a card, I put it in my bag, and then I forgot about it. And then suddenly, a week later or so, I found the card. And then I was checking up the website online. And when I read about the abuse and the abuse cycle and what you had to do, I realized that was the first time when I really realized oh my God, this is actually me. This is my situation. And I'm in the middle of this. And it was like somebody had pulled or poured ice cold water over me. And what it also recommended were that you should tell somebody. And I did that. It also recommended that you would write down what was really going on and try to have that somewhere. So I started to write on my phone. I started to write a logbook for myself. These recommendations, and there were some other recommendations as well, that you should have some money, you should have an ID or a passport somewhere where you can reach it if you were thrown out or had run from home. And I had that. And I think also what really changed my own perception of myself was this to share and tell somebody. So I told the person that I actually didn't knew so much, but she were extremely open-minded and supportive. And I'm very thankful for that. And that also changed something in me to tell somebody, to tell my story. So my own blurry experience and perception of the situation and myself suddenly became more tactile, and I could see it more clearly by telling my story. And the writing, I will say, it's connected to that you put it out of your mind and you put it on a piece of paper, and then you read it and you realize it becomes more tactile and you can see yourself more clearly. And for me, writing to myself actually became a big part of my healing. And something else that I also did were going to therapy. I did find a very good therapist with a specialty in narcissistic personality disorder and relationship with a person with NPD. And that also were extremely supportive. And I also went to healing and to physical therapy. And I also traveled. And I traveled by myself. And that too was extremely strengthening for me, because my self-trust were extremely low or nearly nothing left. So doing something that were stronger than the abusive situation I had been in, that also healed me, another positive experience and something that I did by myself, the travel. So, yeah, these were some of the things that I were doing to heal and to gain my own strength and my sanity back.
For folks listening to this that may want to check you out this week at the festival, what can they expect to experience as they watch you move through this piece?
Yeah, so I'm not on stage myself. It's three performers on stage, one woman and two men. And the music is made by an electronic club musician who, and this is his second theater piece where he's making the electronic music too. And these three persons, they are not having a traditional theater persona or role, but they are switching roles, all three. So you don't, as an audience, you become a little bit insecure if they are actually the perpetrator or if they are the survivors. And the whole piece is, I have composed it after, I've used the dramaturgy after the abuse cycle. So first idealization, where you lift the other person up, and then the devaluation, where you really put the other person down, and then the discard, where you throw the other person away. So we have been trying to make the whole piece with these three parts of the abuse cycle. And as an audience, then you get drawn into the story like a piece of a puzzle. So it's fragmented in the beginning, and then the picture of these different puzzle pieces become more and more clear and whole. And then in the very end, I'm breaking this abuse cycle, and I'm doing a sort of a healing dance with and for the audience. So we are all going through a healing ritual.
What is your hope for audiences that see this piece? In what ways do you hope this piece transforms, impacts, or changes them?
I hope that this will make a bigger, or create a bigger understanding of a situation, an abusive situation with a narcissistic personality disorder, as well as other people who have. So clearly, you have some issues when you are abusing another person. So I hope this will put light on a situation like that, and what it can be and what to do, and also that people hopefully get some tools for how to deal with it, a situation like this. But it's also by telling my story, I hope that other people also can start to tell their story, and that my story can help other people to understand a difficult situation and get strength to come out of a difficult situation like that, but also maybe be supportive to somebody you know that are in a difficult situation like that. So I hope people will both get wiser and get empowered, and also a bigger understanding for a situation like this. Because if you haven't been in an abusive situation, it's more or less impossible to empathize and to understand what's really going on, and how difficult it is also to leave a relationship like this, because of you are struggling with both a sort of addiction and Stockholm syndrome, and your addiction to the paradoxically, your addiction to this unhealthy attachment that you have with this person. Yeah.
You all have been listening to Law and Disorder. I am your host, Kat Brooks. This week's Resistance in Residence artist is artistic director, dancer, choreographer, theater maker, Annika Lewis. She has a new production out called Soul Catcher. It is running in the 2024 San Francisco International Arts Festival this week in the Mission District. May 1st through 12th are the total dates for the festival. Annika, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA, that's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.